Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bulls Beat Podcast Show, the Chicago Bulls Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bulls Beat, Bulls fans. Doug Tonis here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls. And the season is winding down, not too many games left. Obviously, the thing we're doing the most is tracking the picks. And so when we look at the two picks the Bulls are going to have, the first obviously is their own. I think it looks pretty certain they're going to be slotted into that ninth spot, but it will depend a lot on what happens in this next game against the New York Knicks, which is tomorrow, Monday, as I record this. If the Bulls lose to the Knicks, who got an unexpected win yesterday, that would actually create a big enough gap that maybe, just maybe, New York might stick in front of the Bulls in that slot. Now, I don't think that it's likely the Bulls are going to lose to the Knicks, but you never know. They did sit Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, and Chris Dunn in this last game. Chris Dunn injured his toe a couple games ago, so he was out. Zach LaVine sat with general soreness in his knee, so he's out. Lauri still is having some back spasms, and so he is out. And so you do kind of have to wonder what type of lineups the Bulls are going to be running the rest of the season. You also have to wonder how serious any of these injuries are, if this is just shadow tanking of like, hey, guys are a little banged up, we're going to rest them to be extra cautious, or, you know, just try not to win, or if these guys really have something going on that's worth worrying about. Now, Lauri has missed several games now, so that one might be drifting into the slightly larger concern. And I think this is the third time he's missed games this year with back spasms, which then I think raises the question, are these back spasms something you have to be wary of as a Bulls fan for the rest of his career? Clearly, the back is not a good place to have injuries. I'll say this, though. I don't think I'm that concerned yet. I mean, it's clearly at least a teeny bit of a worry, but I think probably he could play if he had to. But beyond that, the other thing is, this is a guy going from college to the NBA. He's still extremely young. He needs that strength training program to build up all that muscle. You know, all of a sudden he's got guys who are much bigger than he is, day in and day out, playing twice as many games as he's used to, getting banged around and beaten up a lot more than he's used to. That just takes a lot of toll on your back and your core. And so I think in a couple years when Lauri gets, you know, some more work in on his core and stuff, it probably won't be a problem. Still obviously something to keep an eye on, though. But so far, the issues haven't seemed to be so significant in terms of what's going on with his back that it would seem to be like chronic back pain type of issue. Seems more when you have spasms that this is probably a muscle that's just been overworked due to too much exertion relative to what he's used to, which I think is common for big men coming from college into the NBA, who also are playing a pretty huge load in terms of minutes. Lauri's playing a lot of minutes. He's getting a lot of time on the court, and so I think that also makes a big difference. Zach LaVine's injury with the knee, I mean, I guess you always got to be a little concerned if a guy who tore an ACL is having some soreness in his knee, but I also don't think this is a big problem overall going forward for him. Chris Dunn's injury does not seem like really a big deal at all, except for the fact that Chris Dunn's now had a bunch of injuries, and you kind of just wonder if he's one of these guys who's more likely to get hurt just with his play style. And I shouldn't say you wonder. He definitely is one of these types of guys who's more likely to get hurt due to his play style. Hopefully this is just a minor setback and doesn't really become a trend for him. I mean, I don't think he's had any injuries to date that make me feel like he's going to be injury prone. It's just the play style he has makes it more likely for him to get hurt, and that's something we'll just have to watch going forward. So that's kind of where the Bulls are at right now. Now, if we go to the Pelican side of things, things are really interesting. The Pelicans are basically in a three-way tie for eighth. Sorry, I misspoke. They're actually in eighth by themselves now. I was looking at the standings last night before the results of the games. They were in a three-way tie at that point. So they're now in eighth by themselves, and I believe there's five teams ahead of them in the Eastern Conference as well. So right now, they would have, I think, pick 18, if I'm not mistaken, in the draft. Sorry, I don't have my computer in front of me, so I'm going off the top of my head, which is a little bit dangerous. But they're right around the 18th pick slot, which is a heck of a lot better than a week ago when they were sitting at 25, 26. So the thing with the Pelicans here is they can move a whole lot based on what happens over the rest of the season for them. They are basically within two games, plus or minus, with about 11 different teams right now. And they're a game and a half above two teams to actually make the playoffs. So they could still potentially miss the playoffs. ESPN calculated their odds at 70% to make the playoffs. So that's obviously pretty high. It seems likely that they're going to do that. And I kind of took a look at Denver's schedule and the Clippers' schedule, and both have tougher schedules than the Pelicans, who also have a pretty tough schedule in and of themselves. So it really does depend how well the Pelicans play down the stretch, but they definitely have their fate in their hands. And I think it's going to be challenging for one of these other teams to pass them and get ahead of them. I think the Pelicans will probably lock up that slot, but we'll see. Anything can happen if they go on a stretch of bad losses. Things could easily turn around. Now, they've got a game tonight. It's just probably a few hours after our record. This is against Boston. Looks like they might get lucky in that one. That was a game that looked like probably a loss, but Kyrie Irving might not play, in which case it should be a fairly straightforward Pelicans win. Also, they've got another game left against the Spurs. We're one of the teams that are playing right in that range with them. They have a few games actually against those teams right in that range. So the Pelicans really kind of control their own destiny in terms of how high they can get a seed. Now, the Spurs still haven't gotten Kawhi Leonard back. There's some thought that maybe he was supposed to come back actually in that last Pelicans game, but he didn't. So that'll be a big impact on whether they can continue to play better than the Pelicans going forward. Overall, the Pelicans have, I think it's 13 games left. I don't see them winning more than 7 of those games. So 7-6, I think, is probably going to be my rough guess at their record. Now, could be a game worse, could be a game better. But at 7-6, I think they'll probably find a way to sneak into the playoffs and probably finish in the 7 range. I would suspect we're going to end up getting picked 20-21 out of this deal when all is said and done. But it could really go either way. There is an opportunity that the Bulls could get a pick as high as 14 if the Pelicans have a rough end to the year, which would be obviously tremendously higher value than we have now. And this really raises the question of how draft picks are distributed in the NBA. I mean, the draft picks have so much value for teams, and you look at this, and there's like no difference between about like 12 teams in the league, but there's a huge difference in terms of the asset they're going to get back in the NBA draft. And I think that's also true with the lotto teams. Clearly, there's a bunch of teams that are all within a couple games of each other here at the bottom. But the value of the team that ends up, you know, at the very bottom is going to be much, much higher than the other ones. And the NBA is trying to address that, you know, with the changed odds going into next season. And I kind of wonder, one thing I thought about was, what if you just made the odds based on, like, you know, percentage of total wins of, like, all lottery teams? And you figure out some way to basically say, look, if you have, you know, 8 teams that are all clumped together and they're all like right around each other, what if you just said, hey, your odds are basically nearly dead even for each of these teams, not because one is 7th and one is 1st, but because all of them are effectively in the same percentage of total wins. There really isn't like any kind of big, you know, talent gap between these teams because they're performing this way. And maybe you then, instead of drawing just the first 3 picks, you draw the first 6 picks. And now all of a sudden, it's a really different game where teams that are truly bad will get rewarded with better odds. But the teams that are just like really bad as well, but just a little bit better, like one game better, won't be massively penalized for it. I think that would be an interesting way to do it. Now, there's a lot of things people are talking about doing this. I am also sort of the opinion that you don't really need to make massive changes to the system either, and that you could probably just go with how it is. So that's kind of your draft pick update for the show. Now, watching the Bulls games recently, the one thing that I found interesting has been watching Cameron Payne. Now, this was a guy I think we all had given up on. I thought, this guy is completely worthless. Wondered why the Bulls burned $3 million picking up his option for the next year when they already have Chris Dunn and Jaren Grant on contracts. And watching Payne over the past 10, 12 games, however many he's played recently, he's kind of impressed me a little bit. And I kind of waffle back and forth in my head, like, is Payne not so bad, or is this kind of hot garbage? And so a few things, clearly, that a lot of the Bulls bench players seem to benefit from is the Bulls are down by a lot, quite a bit. Their bench players often seem to do really well. I think the intensity of the opposing team tends to go down if their starters don't put up good numbers and they come in with a big lead. They tend to beat up a lot on the weaker players of other teams. The Bulls always seem to do very, very well with their bench units relative to their starting units. But those same guys moving from bench to starting don't then translate to do well as starters. So I think that's maybe one concern I have overall with the team. And, you know, listening to the show, I've been pretty positive about the Bulls' future and thinking that this core they have is pretty good and could actually amount to something pretty decent. I'm not saying they're a title team. I think probably they're definitely not going to be a title team unless they make some kind of really tremendous leap that is unforeseen at this point, or sign someone that's really unforeseen at this point. But I do think that they have a promising young future. But now, watching how the team is doing, seeing that Dunn, LaVine, and Markkanen actually have the worst combined plus-minus for like their three-man unit of like any unit on the team. It kind of makes me wonder, like, do these pieces fit together and how are things going to go, you know, next year? I think the Bulls do have some pretty serious questions. And so that's not like some crazy thing to say, hey, a team with 25 wins probably has some serious questions. But I do wonder if maybe I got a little too excited about this group, watching them beat up on kind of bad teams and thinking maybe they're a little better than they are, while so many teams are really kind of attempting to lose. I go back and forth on that a little bit, only because the Bulls have now made decisions where they're sort of attempting to lose. That said, Cameron Payne has actually played really well. Cristiano Felicio has actually played pretty well. And so these guys you put in who you thought, oh, these guys are going to kill you, they haven't really killed you. They've actually done pretty well. Now, when I look at Cameron Payne, I like how active he is on defense. He's definitely a guy who over-pursues the ball, but he's really aggressive. He comes up with a lot of steals, gets in the passing lanes. He attempts to apply pressure. I mean, I like the attitude he's got going on as a third-year player in the NBA. I think that's, you know, pretty decent. His shooting has actually been pretty solid. He's been 38% from the three-point line while putting up a respectable number of attempts each game. His overall PER has been very solid. I think his passing has been pretty decent. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Chris Dunn in the sense that when he's making mistakes being aggressive and playing out of control. He's sort of the anti-Jaren Grant, who tends to just be extremely conservative with almost everything he does, except occasionally when he tries to score on his own, he'll be a little bit more aggressive. But his passes are very conservative. He's not really creating anything. And Cameron Payne looks like he's kind of a little bit out of control, trying to create stuff, trying to create havoc. And really on both ends of the court, he sometimes gets burned defensively too, trying to go for those steals over pursues, and his guy gets, you know, good shots. But Cameron Payne has showed me something that makes me think, maybe this guy actually has a chance at an NBA career. From a Bulls perspective, I don't know how important that is, because you got one more year of the guy under contract under a decent deal. After that, he's going to be a restricted free agent. You're going to have to pay up market value for him. And I don't think he's so special that you have to worry about it one way or the other. A lot of times what's really nice about these rookie salaries is you're getting a guy who's giving you above market value for the money you're paying him because he's stuck on this rookie deal. Well, once you have to pay him fair market value, it's not that interesting, only because in general, you could go out to the market and you can replace him with another guy who provides fair market value. Also, the fact that I don't really believe in his shooting right now. He's been shooting 38% from the three-point line, but looking at his form, he doesn't really strike me as a guy who's going to be a great shooter or be able to maintain that level of high percentage. It's nice that he's doing it now, but he's got one of those like 1 foot kind of in front of the other, not quite square to the basket type shots. And I just don't see so many guys with that type of shot really maintaining excellence in terms of three-point shooting. And I don't think he has the reputation of a shooter, so I don't think guys are really, you know, coming out and challenging him much. So he's not someone whose maybe shot will live up to the percentages it currently is, which then also, you know, gives you some reason to believe that maybe there's going to be a dip coming. Either way, you got to feel a little bit more positive, though, about what you've seen from Cameron Payne. At least you're maybe getting something. And the Bulls are probably going to go into next year with Dunn, Payne, and Grant still as their three-point guards. I don't think they're going to add anyone else in the season. And I think that's okay. You got three guys who are maybe all okay. And it'll be an interesting camp battle, I think, between Grant and Payne next season to see who is going to pick up those primary backup point guard minutes and how that will work. May also depend a little bit on the teammates they play with and the skills of those guys to see how things all fit out in that range. So another thing I want to discuss this show was the Zach LaVine rookie extension. Presumably the Bulls are going to try and come to terms with Zach LaVine. I mean, the assumption is that they'll want to keep him. And so looking at LaVine so far right now, and we'll ignore the knee soreness right now because who knows if that's really a thing or not. Looking at LaVine so far when he's played since coming back from the ACL, I'll say one, he looks really athletic. I mean, it doesn't look like the ACL has destroyed his athleticism. I can't say I watched LaVine so much in the past to see if he had really great lateral shiftiness, kind of like Derrick Rose did, because Derrick Rose also sort of looked athletic after he came back from the ACL, but he was only north-south athletic and not east-west athletic anymore. And Zach LaVine, I'm not sure if he was ever really tremendously east-west athletic to begin with, but he still looks athletic. He's getting huge height on his jumpers. You know, he gets really big height when he goes to the rim. I think he's still pretty aggressive. He still seems to be able to get by his guy okay. I think all of that looks pretty promising from an ACL perspective. Now, from an accuracy perspective, there's big problems. And now, this could be the problem of transferring from a third option to a number one option, facing better defenders, not having other guys to key in your defense. But his shooting percentages are way down. It could also be rust from not having a full offseason, from trying to integrate straight into the lineup from the injury. I mean, there's a lot of things that could be impacting this, but his shooting efficiency and scoring efficiency is way down. I mean, it's like really low right now. I think he's below a 50% TS percentage shooter, or right around 50%. His shooting percentage from two was, or I shouldn't say from two, his overall field goal percentage was at 38.9%, I think, 38.9 maybe, and I thought his three-point percentage was sitting around 35%. So excuse me if those numbers are off a little bit, but you know, overall, he's not really giving you scoring efficiency. And so guys who use up a lot of usage, a lot of possessions, but don't give you scoring efficiency aren't super valuable. His total volume of points per game isn't really that high, and his points per minute are decently high, but still not like amazing. And given his general lack of efficiency, I don't think you really want to pay a whole lot of money for this guy. So the question really then becomes is how much is someone else going to pay Zach LaVine? So you've got this guy, and Zach LaVine has really nice shooting form. He's got a really quick release, a very smooth shot, very athletic, great height. Like watching him, he looks like a guy who could put it all together and become just a really tremendous piece. So the numbers don't bear that out, but the eyeball test kind of makes you feel like this guy should be better than he is. And so does some other team scouting all of this look at this and say, I believe in Zach LaVine and I'm going to pay him a huge amount of money? Because that's really the risk here, is if some other team comes in and pays Zach a lot of money. Zach's qualifying offer is really low. So if the Bulls offer like $15 million a year, $16 million a year, Zach's going to have a tough decision, because if he takes the qualifying offer and doesn't have a stellar year, he's actually going to lose a ton of money, because he's going to lose so much between the qualifying offer and that first year on the Bulls deal. So he's got to then make up like $12 million or so going into the next contract. He's assigned for $12 million more over 4 years than he would if he signs a deal this year, given that he's got a big injury risk going on, and the Bulls probably won't be a whole lot of motivated to play him if he's not going to stick around. And guys in the qualifying offer never stick around, so you should just throw that out right away. If this guy takes the QO, he is gone for sure. So given all of that, it's a really a high-risk situation for Zach and what he does one way or the other. He's one of those guys who seems to have potential but doesn't have enough presently. I think you could sign this guy for $15 million a year, and it wouldn't surprise me if that becomes an amazingly good contract or just an amazingly bad contract over the next 4 years. I mean, like, that's really how much variability is and what could happen with Zach LaVine. Now, guys like this tend to always get paid based on their upside and not based on the downside, which means the Zach LaVine contract probably will be richer than it really deserves to be, and the Bulls will probably end up taking on a good amount of risk if they keep him. I think I might be in the boat right now that if Zach LaVine wants a ton of money, then I might just say, let him go. And I'd say that partially because it doesn't really look like he's playing that well with Dunn and Markkanen. Yeah, he's a massive ball hog at the moment. Maybe he's gunning for the contract. Maybe he's just trying to get his feet underneath him. Maybe Hoiberg is telling him to play this way. But he's not really playing winning basketball right now. He's not giving you the percentages you need. He's not sharing the ball enough. And so at this point, I'm not so into Zach LaVine that I feel like, yep, we definitely got to keep him. I think there's definitely room to say, Zach LaVine, go ahead. You walk to some other team. If a team comes in and offers him like $22 million a year, I think I'm okay just letting Zach go for that. I think Dunn and Markkanen have given you enough value back in terms of recovering from the Butler trade that you should be okay saying, we don't need to try and keep this guy in a bad deal. Unless the Bulls just feel much stronger internally about his gifts and qualities than I do, I think it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out, because that's really going to be one of the big questions for Chicago in the offseason, is who they're going to keep in this sense, whether they're going to try and bid on anyone or anything else. One guy that came up recently to me in terms of bidding on free agents, and it happened, we discussed it last podcast on the Big Red Bus with Mark and Fred, and Fred asked, would you be interested in DeAndre Jordan? And Mark and I both immediately said no. And so I was watching DeAndre Jordan when the Bulls played the Clippers, and I was thinking, like, you know what? DeAndre Jordan would actually maybe be a pretty captivating fit for the Chicago Bulls. Maybe I would be interested in DeAndre Jordan coming. I think that would actually give the Bulls kind of a pretty interesting, strong team. Now, the problem if you go with DeAndre Jordan, I think, is twofold. The first of those two problems is probably he's going to cost you way more than you want to spend. Like, I don't want to go max on DeAndre or Jordan, but if I could get DeAndre Jordan for maybe like 20-ish million a year for 5 years, then I'm thinking, yeah, maybe I would take that. Maybe that would be enough. I mean, he's not a guy who generates his own shot so much, but great rebounder, you know, decent post player, obviously super athletic. You can run a lot of lobs and other plays. Gives you some quality defense down low in terms of stopping other driving players from getting to the basket, and probably fits in pretty well next to a guy like Lauri Markkanen as a guy who would fit. Now, you have Robin Lopez on the team still, who is not going to say anything like DeAndre Jordan, but kind of like a poor man's DeAndre Jordan in some ways. Really just it doesn't quite have the same level of athleticism, probably not quite as much rim protection, but does give you a lot of the same things that DeAndre Jordan would give you. And so you probably would need to figure out some way to move Lopez if that were to happen. But I do think DeAndre Jordan would be a pretty good fit for the team. The problem is just the price tag. But if we assume a high price and the price doesn't end up actually being high, he might actually be a guy who's an intriguing fit for the team. So I would say maybe it actually does kind of make sense. The thing that scares me a little bit about a guy like Jordan, obviously he's not a shooter. And Chris Dunn, your point guard, who's going to start your games, is not a shooter. And I always get a little nervous when you have too many non-shooters. Now, it's fine. Well, you got Lowry, who's clearly a shooter, and Levine in the lineup, who's clearly a shooter. But now that other wing has got to be a shooter, and maybe that is where things get a little bit interesting to me, because I'm not sure who you put in that other spot who's going to be a quality shooter for the Chicago Bulls in that other guard spot. And I think that would be maybe a concern. But I will say, like I was thinking about after watching, I'm like, maybe there's some fit for this after all, if the price tag got low enough. And then I started thinking, like, would I really want to pay DeAndre Jordan more than I want to play Zach LaVine? And I'm looking at Zach LaVine saying, I don't think I'd pay him $20 million a year. And now it becomes a little questionable. So it does kind of depend also on what the Bulls do on draft day and where they end up in the draft. I mean, the Bulls still obviously have potential to win the lottery and get a top three pick. Doesn't seem real likely. Probably not going to Derrick Rose it. But you never know. 1.9% chance. 6-7% chance overall or something like that. Maybe if they finish ninth, probably around a 6% chance overall of moving up. And so, you know, unlikely, but stranger things have happened. And if the Bulls move up, then clearly they might draft one of these big men, and you're not going to bring in a guy like Jordan. But if they stay where they are and they end up drafting a wing, like one of the guys Fred always likes, the Bridges guys, you know, then maybe all of a sudden it makes a lot more sense to get a guy like Jordan. So I think it's an intriguing possibility. Probably not going to happen. The price tag's probably going to be too high. But you just can never tell because there's not so many teams with cap room. And I don't know how many teams would look at DeAndre Jordan and say, we're a DeAndre Jordan away from anything. And neither are the Bulls in some senses either. But center, especially a guy who doesn't shoot, you know, it's like you only need like one guy like that on your team, really. And I think most teams in the league kind of have a guy like that. And so it becomes an interesting question. The Bulls are one of those teams, right? Like we have Robin Lopez, who's a guy like that. Now, DeAndre Jordan might be a better version of that, but I just don't know that we're going to pay so much money for a better version of Robin Lopez unless we can somehow move Robin Lopez. So that is maybe my thoughts on that topic. Anyway, that will do it for this edition of the Bulls Beat. You can, of course, download the show directly on ChicagoBullseye.com, where I'm currently hosting it. It will be up on iTunes. I did sign into Stitcher Radio, so the show should be up there now. And, of course, I've got the RSS feed. If you want me to try and post it somewhere else, please let me know. I kind of assume like all the Google Podcast stuff just picks it up automatically. But if there is somewhere else you used to listen to the show and you want to listen to it again, please let me know and I will attempt to accommodate you. I am Doug_Tonis on Twitter as well if you'd like to chat with me there. And I'll talk to you guys next week.